morning, everyone. This is Ivan China for Creative Disturbance and Virtual Africa. Today, I have the great pleasure to be with Ralph Bowland in Cape Town, South Africa. Good morning, Ralph.
Good morning. How's it going, Ivan?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much for accepting the invitation. Thanks to Max Newstater too. Can you please introduce yourself in a few seconds?
Yeah. My name is Ralph Borland, and I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cape Town, and I work on independent art and design projects, and I'm here particularly to talk about my project, African Robots.
Yep. A project that you recently presented at the Science Gallery in Dublin.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Before going to your, before talking about your project, I would like to come back a little bit on your, in your education. So you was born in South Africa, but how did you end up doing your studies in Ireland and in the US?
Yeah, so as you say, I was born in Cape Town, South Africa. And when I was about 12, my family moved to Zimbabwe. So I went to high school in Zimbabwe. Came back to Cape Town to do my undergraduate degree in sculpture at the Fine Art School here. And after art school, I spent a bit of time being a promoter and a DJ, organizing parties. And I got really interested in how to use different kinds of media in art making. So I was interested in sound and visuals and so on. And I heard about this program at New York University called the Interactive Telecommunications Program, where you could learn about how to use computers and electronics for making art. So I applied and I got accepted and I got a partial scholarship from the university. So in 1999, I moved to New York and started my master's degree there.
Do you know, just an aside question, do you know Ziva School, the School of Design, which has been created by Saki Mafumbikwa?
Okay. No, I haven't met him. I'd be interested for you to make the contact, for sure. Yeah, or I'll find out more about him, yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. So of course, you're making robots. So
yeah, that's right.
Your inspiration comes from the talk that I've seen. You say that your inspiration comes from what the kind of toys that children in Africa make by their own hands. Are you using African craft to kind of give them some animation?
Yes.
Because your robots are not that, you know, fancy or high tech as some could imagine. I was really surprised to see those raw materials.
Yeah, I guess robots is a bit of an exaggeration at the moment. But yeah, my interest in wire art started from seeing people making wire art for most of my life. And I tried when I was a kid and a teenager to make my own wirework cars and things as well. But basically it's to do with in Cape Town, as well as in Johannesburg and in Harare and so on. But you can see mainly Zimbabwean wire workers selling wirework toys at the traffic lights, like little cars and planes and animals and insects and flowers and so on. But they sometimes have a bit of movement, so like the classic wire work car that you can push along and it has wheels that turn. But I had the idea it would be interesting to introduce more to these little toys. So because I have this background in learning how to use electronics from my master's program, so I know that with the right knowledge, you can use relatively cheap electronic components and introduce movements, and you can sense light or produce sounds, or you could make little interactive toys. So I thought, it's actually feasible to do this. Like, it doesn't necessarily cost a lot of money, but it's about the knowledge to do it. So that was the start of the idea, was just thinking, no, imagine if you could see this, if you pulled up at the traffic lights and you could buy a little robot, not just a static object.
Do you have an idea of the story of automata in Africa? Is there any relationship with the field of artificial life in your work? Any interest in artificial life itself?
Yeah, well, so the first one, automata, I'm not aware of a big African history, but I'd be interested in hearing. I mean, I am aware of, say, like a Middle Eastern history, like this famous inventor called Al-Jazari from the 10th or 11th centuries, who was designing some very early mechanical devices like toys and things for entertainment. And of course, automata also play a big history in the history of computing. So yeah. Things like the Mechanical Turk leading to early computers. The idea that some of these early toys or things for entertainment actually laid the groundwork for modern computing. So there's an interesting crossover there. In terms of artificial life, I am actually very interested in artificial life. I like things like Conway's Game of Life, like those simple cellular automata type things. In relation to this project, I'd like to design some simple wirework automatons, like little birds or insects that interact with each other. And through that, you could get like swarm behaviors or emergent behaviors. That would be interesting to do.
What will separate your work from the one of, for example, Theo Jensen?
Well, I think his work is very interesting. So, in fact, I was just showing his Strunz-Biester project to a wire worker like a week or so ago as an example of how you could work with found materials or cheap materials to make really interesting forms. So I think he'd be a good reference point, actually. I think that, I mean, he's producing his own work in a particular environment. And what I'm interested in doing here would be adapting what people do already locally with their materials, like with wire and with their approaches, and introducing some new ideas. But I mean, Theo Jensen's ideas could definitely be one of the areas we look at for looking for inspiration.
Okay, you're kind of preceding my next question, but before moving to the collaborative side of your artwork, I just wanted to conclude or to unpack this idea of ethnomathematics.
Yeah.
To stay more on the theoretical dimension of your artwork and your work.
Yeah.
What is ethnomathematics and how does it play? Does it manifest in your robot?
Yeah. So. Part of what I'm doing in my interactions with wire workers or wire artists. So these are men that I meet in Cape Town and get chatting to and then work on projects with. And part of what I'm doing is when they're in my studio working on a project, I'm also learning from them about how they approach their work. And so I learned about things like they always aim to make an individual sculpture using one unbroken piece of wire as far as they can. So they have a kind of craft philosophy about how they want to build things. And that sounded like something that I was reading about at the time, which was about approaches to topology and maths, about how you can find a route, and how you can find a path through a three-dimensional surface. And someone actually pointed out to me, a university academic here, he said, oh, have you heard of ethnomathematics as a field? And I hadn't, so I looked it up, and there's a famous Mozambican ethnomathematician called Paulo Guedes. And basically what it is, it's looking at what people do who are not mathematicians, but they use mathematical principles in their work. And so things like weaving and basketry and craft forms, people use mathematical principles and they can actually solve mathematical problems in a certain way, like geometric problems.
Okay. It just reminded me of a discussion that Roger Malina has, that he shared with us for a class, which is something called Ethics of Curiosity.
Okay, interesting.
Which has been coined by Sundar Sarukhai, an Indian philosopher.
Okay.
And I think the idea is that as opposed to Western societies, the Indian one, for example, didn't conceive mathematics as discover.
Yeah.
So antique Greek, not Greek, but Indian mathematician and philosopher used to think that mathematics is an invention, a creation.
Yeah.
And it's not something which is hidden. It's not the hidden properties behind, you know, behind things and nature in general. So I was just intrigued by this kind of comparison that you.
Yeah, well, I think especially in the realm of geometry and when you mention artificial life, and I think of things like tessellation or fractals or patterning, I mean, you can see all of those things occurring in nature, and you can also kind of replicate them in simple ways through a making process, you know, like crocheting or weaving or wire work.
So if I well understood, have a collaborative work with young artists, with local artists in South Africa and maybe Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
That is different from your own personal work. I was wondering if you can just unpack your work, what you're doing, and explain it with other African artists. I think you pay them, you allow them to work in your studio, and you're making use of their work to extend your own projects. So, can you please?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. I mean, so for one thing, I do different kinds of work. So my postdoctoral post is on a project called Global Arenas at the University of Cape Town. And when you were talking about the Indian approach to mathematics, I was also thinking, you know, something we look at is indigenous knowledge systems and also just that whole relationship of north and south in terms of knowledge domains. So that's my one kind of job. That's a research project I'm working on. But then I've always done my own art and design projects, which are things I just pick up that interest me, and sometimes they're funded, sometimes they produce work, sometimes it's just something that I just do, you know, out of interest. With African Robots, it moved from an idea of just something I wanted to pursue into something that I've attracted some funding for this year, which has been great. But basically, in terms of my own role in it and how it works as art, on the one hand, the outermost frame of the project is as an art intervention, is how I would see it. So basically, I've observed that there's an existing system in society, which is this production of wire work. And I really like aspects of that system, like, for example, their process of innovation, that when one wire worker comes up with a new idea, if it's successful, other wire workers copy them and they produce their own versions. And there's this combination of competition and cooperation amongst the workers in this craft. So I want to insert my own influence into it and see if it catches on and if it actually becomes real. So for me, that's a kind of an artwork, like an art intervention on the very outer boundary. And then within that, I work with wire workers both just to share skills on a fairly flat level, where I'm learning from them about how they do things, and then I'm sharing my knowledge about electronics and aesthetics with them. At this stage, it's fairly informal. I mean, I pay them an hourly rate from my funding for the time that they spend with me, because I'm acknowledging the fact that if they're not on the street selling their work, they're potentially losing income. So I don't want them to take a risk on a project of mine. So I direct funding towards them for that. But so far, yeah, it's a fairly informal arrangement where I hope to come out with some of my own sculptures and artworks that I would commission them to work on. And I also want them to take these ideas and techniques and have it influence what they make and what they sell on the streets. So it's happening on a number of levels, I guess.
I think I recall the name of Dube Chipangura.
Yeah, so Dube is actually one of the first wire workers that I started talking to in Cape Town, and it was, purely like informal meeting of I wanted to experiment with making a wire work bird, the first thing that I made. So I actually made it as a 3D model and printed out pieces, like parts to be made, and then went to the traffic lights and just asked around and said, "Is anybody interested in making this for me?" and negotiated a price. And that's how I met Dube. But then since then, we've known each other now for a couple of years. So whenever I go by the traffic lights, we catch up, but sometimes he comes to my studio. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to put more work in these guys' direction, just because they could always use more opportunities for work. But I like the fact that we have a fairly sort of flat relationship. It's like, establishing some form of a friendship or a partnership of some kind.
Okay, I need to wrap up the discussion, but just two or three more questions before we
Sure.
finish. I will be happy to give them some advice if you want to make a podcast with us on Creative Disturbance on Virtual Africa.
Oh,
If you
sure.
think that would be
Yeah.
of interest for them,
Yeah, for
even
sure.
in their own language. I don't know if they all speak English, but it could be a podcast between the two of you in whatever language you speak over there. But my question was about, do you also work with puppeteers?
I work with who did you say?
Puppets, like
Oh, puppets.
yeah.
Yeah. I haven't worked with puppet makers, but I'm actually very interested in the Handspring Puppet Theatre Company, who's based in South Africa. I don't know if you know their work. They did a production called Warhorse that did very well. But they're very good at producing life in inanimate objects, so I thought they would be really good to speak to about that.
Yeah, this is my theater background, which
Okay. Well, yeah, I think that's definitely a reference point, yeah.
the other question was about do you know if there's any African robotic schools or place where people can learn the kind of skill that you have today and could apply it in their own crafts?
I don't think that there is something that's just like what I'm proposing. And I hope that I will develop mine to the point where it'll be accept where it's a sort of a program that could be rolled out and be made accessible to people. At the moment, I think robotics is probably still within the universities, and there are things that I've seen, like say workshops for children using Lego Mindstorms, and those kind of introduction to robotics. Which is great, but I don't see it really bridging the gap to, say, crafters. I haven't seen much of that. I haven't seen any of that. Yeah.
I think in your talk, you was probably advocating from the integration of the art into the whole STEM field,
Yeah.
science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yeah,
And
no,
I was wondering what are your vision for the possibilities of technology for African artists today?
Well, I've been thinking about that question, which in my Dublin presentation, my former supervisor asked me. She asked me about, why African robots, and is that could that imply something negative, like that robotics out of Africa would be rudimentary or primitive or something? And I was saying, that's not the intention. But what I think the project is proposing is that, Africa symbolizes a sort of a resource poor environment for a lot of people, where it suggests that if you could apply fundamental knowledge about computing and electronics and mechanics without expensive equipment and materials, if you could be creative about using humble materials, but use the very powerful ideas and knowledge and techniques, that would be an alternative path for technology, which would be a kind of more democratizing, accessible path for technology. So, yeah, I think maybe art is often an arena in which we try to think of alternative paths and we imagine different ways of being. So perhaps that relationship of art with science and technology is that, you know, that art can imagine different trajectories and that that could influence the development of science and technology.
Thank you so much, Ralph, for being with us today. And I hope to have you again soon on Creative Disturbance. We'll be glad to hear from you.
Thank you very much.